Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. This morning we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam 8th canto, second chapter entitled Elephant Gajendra's Crisis, texts 20 to 30. So we will start, we will read text 20.
Atraikada tadgiri kanashrayam. Tatraikada tadgiri kananashrayam. Karenu birvaranayu tapascharan. Karenu birvaranayu tapascharan. Sakantakam ki chakavenu vetravad. Sakantakam ki chakavenu vetravad. Vishala gulman parujan vanaspatin. Vishala gulman parujan vanaspatim. Pararujan.
Translation. The leader of the elephants who lived in the forest of the mountain Trikuta once wandered toward the lake with his female elephants. He broke many plants, creepers, thickets, and trees, not caring for their piercing thorns. So I'll just continue reading till the 30th verse, which has a purport. Verse 21. Simply by catching scent of that elephant, all the other elephants, the tigers, and other ferocious elements such as lions, rhinoceroses, great serpents and black and white sharabas fled in fear. The chamari deer also fled. 22. By the mercy of this elephant, animals like foxes, wolves, buffaloes, bears, boars, gupuchas, porcupines, monkeys, rabbits, the other deer and many other small animals loitered elsewhere in the forest where they were not afraid of him. All the animals were practically controlled by this elephant, yet although they could move without fear because of respect, they did not stand before him. 23, 24. Surrounded by the herd of other elephants, including females, and following by the young ones, Gajapati, the leader of the elephants, made Trikuta Mountain tremble all around because of the weight of his body. He was perspiring, liquor dripped from his mouth, and his vision was overwhelmed by intoxication. He was being served by the bumblebees who drank honey, and from a distance he could smell the dust of the lotus flowers, which was carried from the lake by the breeze. Thus surrounded by his associates who were afflicted by thirst, he soon arrived at the bank of the lake. 25. The king of the elephants entered the lake, bathing thoroughly, and was relieved of his fatigue. Then with the aid of his trunk, he drank the cool, clear, nectarian water, which was mixed with the dust of the lotus flowers and water lilies, until he was fully satisfied. 26. Like a human being who lacks spiritual knowledge and is too attached to the members of family, the elephant, being illusioned by the external energy of Krishna, had his wife and children bathe and drink the water. Indeed, he raised water from the lake with his trunk and sprayed it over them. He did not mind the hard labor involved in this endeavor. 27. By the arrangement of Providence, O King, a strong crocodile was angry at the elephant and attacked the elephant's leg in the water. The elephant was certainly strong, and he tried his best to get free from his danger, from this danger sent by Providence. 28. Thereafter, seeing Gajendra in that grave condition, his wife felt very, very sorry and began to cry. The other elephants wanted to help Gajendra, but because of the crocodile's great strength, they could not rescue him by grasping him from behind. 29. O King, the elephant and the crocodile fought in this way, pulling one another in and out of the water for 1,000 years. Upon seeing the fight, the demigods were very surprised. Text 30. Thereafter, because of being pulled into the water and fighting for many long years, the elephant became diminished in his mental, physical, and sensual strength. The crocodile, on the contrary, being an animal of the water, increased in enthusiasm, physical strength, and sensual power. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Srila Prabhupada. In the fighting between the elephant and the crocodile, the difference was that although the elephant was extremely powerful, he was in foreign place, in the water. During 1,000 years of fighting, he could not get any food. And under that circumstance, his bodily strength diminished. And because his bodily strength diminished, his mind also became weak and his senses were less powerful. The crocodile, however, being an animal of the water, had no difficulties. He was getting food and was therefore getting mental strength and sensual encouragement. Thus, while the elephant became reduced in strength, the crocodile became more and more powerful. Now from this, we may take the lesson that in our fight with Maya, we should not be in position in which our strength, enthusiasm, and senses will be unable to fight vigorously. Our Krishna consciousness movement has actually declared war against the illusory energy in which all the living entities are rotting in the false understanding of civilization. The soldiers in this Krishna consciousness movement must always possess physical strength, enthusiasm, and sensual power. To keep themselves fit, they must therefore place themselves in a normal condition of life. What constitutes a normal condition will not be the same for everyone, and therefore there are divisions of Varnashram: Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. Especially in this age, Kali Yuga, it is advised that no one takes sannyas. Ashvamedam gavalambam sannyasam palapaitrikam devarena sutatpatim kalam pancha vivarjayat. Brahma Vaivarta Purana. From this we can understand that in this age the sannyasa ashram is forbidden because people are not strong. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed us an example in taking sannyas at the age of 24 years. But even Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya advised Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be extremely careful because he had taken sannyas in an early age. For preaching, we give young boys sannyas, but actually it is being experienced that they are not fit for sannyas. There is no harm, however, if one thinks that he is unfit for sannyas. If he is very much agitated sexually, he should go to the ashram where sex is allowed, namely the Grihastha ashram. That one has been found to be very weak in one place does not mean that he should stop fighting the crocodile of Maya. One should take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, and we shall see Gajendra do. And at the same time, one can be a grihastha if he is satisfied with sexual indulgence. There is no need to give up the fight. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore recommended, Stane stita shruti gadau gatam tanu van manobihi. One may stay in whichever ashram is suitable for him. It is not essential that one take sannyas. If one is sexually agitated, he can enter the grihastha ashram, but one must continue fighting. For one who is not in a transcendental position, to take sannyas ashram is not a very great credit. If sannyas is not suitable, one may enter the grihastha ashram and fight Maya with great strength. But one should not give up fighting and go away. Raikada tadgiri kanashraya kareno birvarana yuta pascharan sankantakam kichakaveno vetravad vishalagulmam pararujan vanaspatin. The leader of the elephants who lived in the forest of the mountain Trikuta once wandered toward the lake with his female elephants. He broke many plants, creepers, thickets, and trees, not caring for their piercing thorns. That's very interesting to note. Notice also one thing in the Gajendra Lila itself, and that is something that some skeptics would kind of point first out, and that is that this elephant is kind of a, in a sense, very extraordinary elephant, and that represents something very mythological in the scriptures, or in the Vedic scriptures. Because if we look from the so-called rational point of view, it seems very very unusual that elephant, especially like this one, for example, can recite prayers, and what to speak of reciting prayers, can remember his past life. So that's one thing that I wanted to address. How do we defend, how do we explain the position of this particular pastime mentioned here in Srimad Bhagavatam? Because many people, as we understand in the past, use this as an excuse to brush off completely all the Vedic instructions which are given for the human being to advance, and especially as we will be talking here, situate themselves in the natural position and advance in the spiritual path. They will just brush it off as some kind of mythological story. Not even like allegorical one, which may kind of help us to grasp some basic principles of spiritual life, but they will just, as we understand, if you once you find one fault in particular subject or a particular thing, then there is the tendency to reject everything altogether. So this particular story, which is given here in the and explained here in the eighth canto, we should understand that this elephant, although of course they may reason in a way, they may say, yes, elephants are very intelligent beings, actually. Some of them, we can find them in the circus. You can learn them different tricks. They have very good memory. They can remember things from many years back, persons who have harmed them or persons who have been kind of kind to them. They're very good. They can be trained. We know in the warfare, and that was many centuries ago when they were used. They were also a very powerful tool for breaking the enemy ranks. They have pretty good intelligence. We know in there is a very prominent case in Guruvayur, how one elephant displayed his intelligence in a particular way. When he became old, he was replaced by the younger elephant. But when the younger elephant was in the procession carrying the deities, and when the older one understood what is going on, he immediately ran and didn't allow the younger one to perform that particular service. He was very, very much attached to that particular service. So these are just the instances when somebody can rationally reason that, okay, yes, some elephants might be intelligent, but how is it possible that this elephant can remember the past life and recite the prayers? So here it is explained, first of all, and another thing is, as we know, many pastimes, actually there are many places, and they would say, this is something that happened here on this planet. As we know, there are many places here in India, I don't know if how much you're aware, but there are at least I know 4 or 5 places which claim to be the place where Gajendra Moksha took place. One is in Pushkar, another one it's in Puri, Jagannath Puri, another one mentioned by Vedanta Desika is in Kanchipuram, and there is Gajendra Moksha near Nagarkoil where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited that particular place. So they will say this is all ordinary, you know, it happened here on the planet, so how is it possible? Therefore we can't take it into account. But actually, first of all, we have to understand that this particular lila, it didn't take exactly place on our planet. It took place in the heavenly planets. And this mountain Trikuta, which we can't see because of its subtle nature, it exists in the heavenly realm. There are 2 Trikuta mountains. One, this one described here in particular, is situated on the next to the, or in the middle, as Srila Prabhupada said, of the Milk Ocean, and another one it's in the Ilavita Varsha of Jambudvipa. But we are not talking about that one. We are talking about the one which is situated in the mid of the Milk Ocean. So these are the heavenly realms. And the heavenly realms, as we know, are inhabited by the heavenly beings which have extraordinary qualities. That they are not ordinary beings as we can encounter here in this particular planet. So they have special qualities and special features. They have particular types of cities that they can display. So they can also talk, they can take, actually all these different kinds of beings have different kind of, as I said, cities by which they can assume different kinds of forms. So they're not ordinary beings. As you know, Hanuman, when he met first time Lord Ramachandra, he came in disguise as a Brahmana. He took a human form. He didn't came as a monkey. And then he inquired from Lord Ramachandra who he was. He was sent by Sugriva, because Sugriva thought maybe there are some allies of Vali. And then there are many other instances. For example, Hanuman himself, the way he was kind of conceived, it was when Parvati and Lord Shiva assumed the form of the monkeys. And we know the story of a Pandu when the sages also took the forms of the deer and were engaged in the sexual intercourse in such a way. So sages have the power. And we know when Svayambhuva Manu and his wife, they also, when they produce different kinds of daughters and given them to different sages, those daughters and sages, they assume different kinds of forms and in this way produce different kinds of living entities. And this is very nicely elaborated and explained by Druta Karma Prabhu and Sadaputa Prabhu, how actually that manifestation of different species of life takes place. And this is something that scientists can't deal with and they can't explain, because we have same DNA cell which kind of reproduces itself, but how it knows how to, the same DNA cell, how to form different organs, how to form different limbs of the body, it's the same thing, but where is that code, where is that information? So Dhrudhakarma Prabhu suggests, he said, it's a subtle bija, it's a subtle seed, it's a subtle information that it's needed for such kind of a construction of a particular body to take place. So we are dealing with very, very subtle things. As we know, even in modern science, things tend to become very, very subtle, especially in quantum mechanics. Things go from the very gross basic physics towards the very subtle, actually even transcendental realm. So that formation, it requires, of a particular living being, it requires particular code for that being to be manifested. So basically science cannot explain such a phenomena without entering actually in the higher, either subtle or spiritual realms. Another point is, even if they object in a sense that those kind of beings we don't have experience of, but we know there are many examples, even if we exclude, for example, religious scriptures, when all these kind of informations are available. We know in the Bible also there is the description of the cherubs, which have four heads, different kinds, one of the ox, one of the bull, one of the eagle, and like this, that they have different kinds of heads. They also fly, they talk. So in a religious scripture, the descriptions of different kinds of enormous sizes of fruits, which we also found here in this Trikuta mountain, when the fruits fall, they create the rivers. They're of enormous size. So many different things are mentioned in the religious scriptures. But aside of that, there are instances where people have witnessed different kinds of living entities appearing on this planet. And those particular instances have been recorded, and it's not just what they could describe as some kind of mass hysteria, not just that one person have seen on many, but those beings have announced themselves to appear at particular place at a particular time, and that has happened several times, and many people of the credible background have a opportunity to witness such kind of appearances. So this is something, again, that scientifically, it's very impossible to deal with and explain, that there are such kind of entities that can exhibit such kind of incredible powers. And entities which levitate, which don't touch the ground. And as similar as is given in Srimad Bhagavatam Purana, when they have their garlands don't fade away. This is one thing, how to recognize actually living entities. Heavenly living entities. Their garlands don't fade away, and flowers, when they drop down, they disappear upon touching the ground. So this is something that is witnessed in Europe. There are a couple of holy places ascribed to Mother Mary, whatever. Anyway, so people have such kind of experience of such kind of encounters. And another thing is another way to kind of recognize the demigod, even if he appears, he doesn't blink. They don't blink with their eyes. And they don't perspire. Of course, here is mentioned Gajendra was perspiring. But again, if they do, another explanation is that kind of perspiration emanates fragrance. It's a very fragrant thing. It's very special. So these kind of beings definitely are unique personalities. So, and that, as I said, that kind of pastimes happen not on this earthly realm, especially related to Gajendra, of course, although they might come. But these particular pastimes took place on the heavenly planets. So this is the difference. And again, if you come back and try to explain how is it that we have this different Gajendra Moksha happening that people claim to happen in different places, Puri, Kanchipuram, or Pushkar, these are different kinds of reflections. Even when Prabhupada was asked about the Hovilam, anything I can say here, he said actually it's not a real place. It's a kind of a replica. It's a reflection. And actually, holy places, there are personified personalities of the holy places. And another thing is they can appear wherever they want. So everything is possible. And another way to explain the different kind of contradictory statement in the Shastra is that they might appear in different kalpas. So the place might remain the same. So this is regarding the Gajendra's appearance, a kind of a... If somebody might try to find any fault in Srimad Bhagavatam describing this particular pastime in such a way. Another very important thing is that elephant here, Gajendra, here initially was described as a very proud living entity wandering through the forest, feared by everyone, feared even by the Sharabas. Sharabas is the animal which is kind of half man, half spider. There is one very interesting temple next to Kumbakonam where Lord Shiva is worshipped in such a form. It's a very ferocious form. So all the animals which were kind of competitors to this particular elephant in his enjoyment, which and kind of his position that he was enjoying, they actually fled away. They couldn't compete with him. And those who were kind of ready to cooperate, they didn't have any fear. Like, you know, when we are good citizens, we don't fear any laws of the government or their representatives. But of course, if we try to challenge and observe that particular position, then there is definitely going to be some kind of a fraction going on. So, but there is no question of it if the government is very, very powerful, more powerful than we are. So therefore, those animals all fled away. And this, and the Gajendra, it is described here, was very, very much attached to that particular sense enjoyment and his position. He wouldn't give up his particular position that he was placed in. And he was very happy being surrounded by all the female associates and wandering through all these different heavenly realms, trying to enjoy as much as possible. But again, as we know, all the heavenly, any position in this material world actually can be challenged at any moment. Of course, Gajendra didn't think this way. It is explained here. He was intoxicated, and he didn't understand his position, his temporary position at this particular moment. So, as Srimad Bhagavad Gita explained, there are all places of miseries, actually. And they are temporary. Abrama Bhuvana Loka, Punaravartin Arjuna, Mamupetya Tukontya, Punarjanmana Vidyate. In whichever place in this material universe, all the planets, actually, there is a repeated birth and death going on. So there is no place where we can be steady, where we can find eternal enjoyment. And especially in such kind of a condition, it is said that Gajendra elephant was very much intoxicated by the such kind of association. And we know being attached to the family life, as the verse itself says. So this is something that we find in the household affairs, that the man who is very much attached to the sweet words of the children, affectionate dealings of his wife, he's attached to different kinds of furniture, different kinds of things that he has acquired, he's attached to the pets. So it's very difficult for him to kind of develop renunciating spirit. As you know, Jadvaita Maharaj once said, he said, actually the process for the man is to develop detachment, and for the man the process of advancement is to become actually attached. So, but in case Gajendra definitely wasn't detached, he was very much attached. It was like Srimad Bhagavatam explains, like a bull who was working very hard, and he didn't mind this hard work. He was spraying, he was using all his energy and strength. He was taking the water, and he was spraying, playing with his associates. And it is explained here, it was a hard work, but he didn't mind it. Similarly, in this material world, people are working so hard, and they don't mind it. They don't mind doing so hard because they are receiving some kind of emotional support again and some kind of pleasure living in the family life, which actually, as Prahlad Maharaj said, it's andakupa, it's a deep well, deep dark well. And they don't realize this. And by the passage of time, the life is actually practically lost. So he didn't mind that hard work. So he was, like Bhagavatam would explain, he was like a bull working very hard, turning around one pivot and chained by his weakest point. For the bull, the weakest point is the nose, but for the man, it's the sex life. This is how Bhagavatam explained. So he didn't mind working so hard, and he was very, very much attached. Like Dhritarashtra, even to the last point, to the last moments, he was so attached to the position of being a king. He wouldn't give it up, even though all his sons were killed, and even though still Yudhishthira was calling him and addressing him as a king, he liked that very much, and he didn't object. And then finally, somehow or other, Vidura, still being compassionate towards Dhritarashtra, at last moment he came almost at the end of Dhritarashtra's life, and he said, you should go at least and inquire about self-realization, at least at the last moments of your life. And somehow or other convinced him to go to the forest and leave that particular position. He used very strong words. He told him, you're like a dog eating the remnants of your master. And this is something that kind of awakened Dhritarashtra. So he's very, very much attached. So therefore, this kind of attachment, it's very difficult to renounce, especially that kind of enjoying spirit, unless somebody from outside comes and enlightens us and gives us information about some higher goals of life. It's very difficult. Therefore, here it is said that Gajendra, in this particular Lila, by the will of the providence, actually by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was able to realize his real position of entanglement here in this material world and really get liberated and understand the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and, you know, taking to the spiritual path by, of course, remembering his prayers from the previous life using it in glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Otherwise, it would have been impossible. So Gajendra was put in such particular situation by the mercy of the Supreme, as it said, by the providence, by the mercy of the Supreme Lord. And we know whenever we get entangled here in this material world, it's only by the mercy of the devotees or the Supreme Lord directly that we can get out of that particular entanglement. Otherwise, it's impossible. And Lord many times makes the arrangements for us to get as soon as possible back home, back to Godhead. So sometimes we may wonder why we are facing different kinds of obstacles and difficulties. So we can understand it is particular mercy of the Lord to have us out of this terrible entangling material situation. Like Vritrasura, King Chitraketu, he was on the way. He was already attaining, even after kind of finishing his reign as a king and attaining the heavenly body. But the Lord wanted him to go back as soon as possible. So in this way, Chitraketu was cursed to become a demon. And Vritrasura actually was very much aware of this. And even while fighting with Indra, although Indra was defeated and Vritrasura was far more powerful than Indra, and he kind of knocked down his thunderbolt and Indra was completely helpless, but still Vritrasura was engaging in, come on, fight. What kind of kshatriya you are? He was engaging in to fight more and more just in order to be killed. And he said, you may stay. He was telling Tundra, you may stay here in this material world, but I don't have any interest in it. I just want to go back home, back to Godhead. So Krishna arranges different kinds of situations wherein we can become purified sooner and get out of these terrible clutches of the material world. So herein, there is very nice analogy that we can draw for this particular pastime also, because Gajendra and the crocodile were fighting in a different positions, actually. They were kind of dragging each other. Elephant would drag crocodile when, of course, initially on the shore, on the beach side of the lake, and crocodile would try to drag him into the water. So this is something that Srila Prabhupada said that it also compares like a fight with the Maya, where we are entering from our natural position in the material world. We are kind of our original position in the spiritual world. We are trying to enter into this material ocean where there are so many terrible and ferocious animals dwelling, immediately ready kind of to devour us. And Vedas can be compared to some instructions, to the instructions of the spiritual master, or instructions given directly by the Shastras, which teach us how to swim and actually survive in this unnatural, actually, environment in which we are trying to enjoy ourselves. Because Gajendra went in, he was trying to enjoy. And immediately it observed actually something that was considered to be a proprietorship. Crocodile thought, he said, this is actually the place where I'm kind of a king. And he didn't like Gajendra enjoying in that particular place. So he was very much agitated and became angry, and therefore he attacked the Gajendra at the first place. So learning how to swim, actually, learning how to live, learning how to survive in the waters of this dangerous material existence is something that is offered by us by the means of the instructions given here in the scriptures, so that we can understand how to survive somehow or other. That can be understood as different kinds of position of Arnashram Dharma that are given, that are meant for slow and gradual elevation towards the ultimate point of getting liberation. And that liberation, as I said, it wasn't possible for us alone to achieve. It has to be somebody to pull us out. Like when we walk, when we enter into the quicksand, it's very difficult to get out of it by ourselves. There has to be somebody to pull us out. But here, even in the case, and that definitely won't be our family, and that definitely won't be our community, that definitely won't be anybody else. Like in the case of Gajendra, his family members, they tried to pull him out. They tried to help him as much as they could, but they were not able to do so. Only Supreme Personality of Godhead could save him from such drowning and entanglement in this particular unnatural position that Gajendra found himself. He wasn't able to be saved by anybody else, because Prabhupada said family members are actually fallible soldiers. It's not possible for anybody to save us in the moment of death, except spiritual master and Krishna himself, unless you really become qualified. In this way, it's only possible to achieve liberation, not the otherwise. And of course, as I remember, the family affairs, Srila Prabhupada explained, I mean, this particular attachment, it is given by the Prabhupada would say, he said he learned it in the school, in the Scottish church college, said it is Marshall's economics. That actually when person becomes very much attached to the family, then actually the economic prosperity becomes possible and people strive for that particular enjoyment more and more. And as we see, Gajendra was very, very happily enjoying and prospering in such a way until he finally encountered the reality of this material world, which is so inevitable. But it's very, very clearly explained in the scriptures. Of course, initially when we speak about the heavenly planets, many people are attached to the living on these particular realms. And this is something that kind of brings them closer, attracts them to the scriptures. But also from another point of view, higher scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam also describe a different kind of reality, the temporary reality of such kind of places. Dukkhalayam Ashashvatam, because this material world is full of misery and it's temporary and it's not meant for us here to stay. So therefore we have to be perfectly equipped and we have to find position, which Srila Prabhupada explains in the last purport of the 30th verse. He said we have to find position where we'll be able to fight this material energy in the best capacity that we can. Otherwise it will be very difficult to survive in this ocean of sharks and all different kinds of ferocious animals that are just ready to devour us at any moment. We try to enjoy, actually, but actually that kind of enjoyment is very much tinged with all kinds of miseries. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur very nicely actually explains what those miseries are. He said that there are three kinds of miseries in this material world, when person actually comes to the material world. So one kind of misery is when person loses or forgets his identity. So that's first kind of misery. He loses his identity, like a person who becomes kind of gets amnesia. He kind of completely forgets who he is, and he just starts wandering around, and it's really kind of a miserable condition. So that's one thing. Second thing is forgetfulness of Krishna, loss of Krishna consciousness, and being inimical towards him, being inimical towards him. And the third one is identification with this material body. Because identification with this material body, we understand what kind of miseries it brings, especially with the Gajendra. He was completely engrossed. He was completely unaware of his real identity. We know many times Indra himself, how many times he becomes falsely proud and of his particular position, and he just completely forgets in his real position, actually, of the servant. The person who is on the top position is actually the topmost servant, not the absolute enjoyer. And therefore, in one instance, actually in many instances, there are so many examples, but he even offended his spiritual master, Brihaspati, and therefore he lost his position. And then, of course, then another person came who also very soon lost his position as well. That was Nahusha. Initially, he was very humble. That's interesting to note. Because Nahusha didn't want to take... He was suggested by the demigods, you've already performed 90 Ashwamedha sacrifices. You're almost kind of qualified to assume the post of Indra, so why don't you come? Now Indra is not present, so why don't you come and reign? And he said, no, I will come when I become fully qualified. But they said, no, it's an urgency, so why don't you come and take the post? And therefore, Nahusha agreed. But as soon as he sat down on that particular seat, like every seat has a problem. Actually, when you sit down, you really start thinking, I deserve it. So Nahusha, in that similar way, also start thinking, well, actually, I am Indra. He start thinking, I am Indra, I'm really deserving it. And he start thinking like the previous Indra, trying to exploit everybody and everything for his sense enjoyment. And therefore, we know the further story. He approached even Sachi, the Indra's wife, and was being carried by the sages, and finally cursed and lost his position just because of that false identification with a particular either position or either the bodily identification, which, as we understand, is not the proper situation where we can fight the illusory energy in this material world. Therefore, Prabhupada is very much emphasizing here, being situated in the natural position. Natural position, first of all, is that of the humbleness and not that kind of a pride which Indra and even here Gajendra has exhibited, you know, trying to enjoy and just trampling down all the plants and creepers. Whatever stood on his way, he was just eliminating immediately. He just didn't care. He was so powerful. Like we see nowadays in the material world, people are just ready, you know, whatever stands in their way, they'll just crash it. It just doesn't matter. Let me just enjoy. Live my life of sense enjoyment. It just doesn't matter what is there on my way. So that's the position of that, not humbleness, but actually pride that causes one to forget his real identity. So what are the principles of the real identity of actually any identity is that we identify as something or we identify with the, we can identify in so many different ways. There's so many different kinds of identification. And that identificatory process, so to say, it's actually it's in constant reconstruction, in constant development, in constant reinterpretation, and we can see this throughout the whole of our life. It's constantly going on, especially from the material point of view. I just have a personal experience. I know, for example, when I kind of was trying to decide which high school to enter, that was kind of initial. There's such a big problem, which high school to enter, whether this is more fit for me, whether that fits for me. At least there was some kind of identity crisis in the teenage age, even from material point of view. Not even, but especially in the material point of view. And then finally, you know, when I started associating with the devotees, there was another problem, whether I should join the ashram, whether I shouldn't join the ashram, whether I should do this, whether I should do this. It came to such a boiling point that I even came to consult some devotee who was an astrologer and tried to tell me, kind of to direct me. It was very difficult to find a real direction in life, to really identify with something. So that's an interesting thing that actually when Srila Prabhupada came to the West, he gave to the devotees, immediately kind of gave them opportunity to identify with the highest position and the original position that actually everybody is, and that is being a devotee of Krishna, being dasa anudasa, gopi bhartu pada kamalayor dasa dasa anudasa, being the servant of the servant. But of course, what was lacking, because we are still not on that particular highest position, and we still need, and we are still identifying with the body. As long as we are identifying with the body, we need a varnasham structure in the system. This is something different that is kind of, it was kind of opposite than what's happening here in India. First, you have a varnasham sister, people are coming, they're very much identifying with the families from which they're coming, and then they take to the devotional service, taking the ultimate identification of the being servant of the servant of the servant. Whereas in the West, it's a completely different situation. And somehow or other, there was definitely further need to establish that identity in the process of Krishna consciousness. And what is that identity? Again, it was very difficult to ascertain. Whether I'm Shudra, how should I act, whether I'm Vaishya, whether I'm Brahmana, whether I'm Brahmachari, whether I'm Grihastha. It's a long-term struggling process, and it takes some time of advancing in Krishna consciousness to really admit, actually, and realize what our position is. Many times we don't want to admit. We're just kind of inspired by somebody else's position or some position which is considered kind of a, which is given priority, is considered superior compared to those which is kind of inferior. So it's a process. It's a very important process to go through and realize what real position is. As Srila Prabhupada was explaining, that's the position from which when we become really humble, again, not pride and striving for something that we don't really deserve or what we really are, because it won't help us. It won't really help us to advance. As in Bhagavad Gita, it said, better to perform our own duties imperfectly than to take to some other duty and perform it perfectly. Because otherwise, if you even take to somebody else's occupation, it will be because of a sinful reaction. It will be because of our fall down. And anyway, even if you think I'm doing some other kinds of work better than the other kind of work, it doesn't matter. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, it's just like every fire is covered by the smoke. So every work is covered by some kind of a fault. But even if we perform our own duty imperfectly, even if it's covered by so much mistakes and faults, it doesn't matter. It won't be because of a sinful reaction. It will be because of gradual elevation towards that highest spiritual understanding. So therefore, understanding the real identity. In the material world, as I said, we identify in so many different ways. We identify with something that we like. And like we can identify, say, with fast driving, and then we can't identify with somebody who kind of dresses in a special and peculiar way. And so many different kinds of identification going on in this material world. But we become very good to somebody who kind of identifies in the same way as we do, but become very inimical and exclude others who don't identify in the same way we do. And this is the problem in the material world, and therefore there is so much of separatism and conflict going on in the material world. And therefore we have speciesism, we have racism, we have pettism, as Jadvaita Maharaj would say. We have so many different kinds of things going on and identifying. But as I said, this identification, it's in constant reconstruction, and constantly we're identifying with different kinds of things. People many times identify with a nation, and they fight for the nation, and many times the same nation then puts them in jail, judging them as the war criminals. And then people completely lost that kind of identity, or they lose the friends, they search for another kinds of friends. So it's a constant, not settled down situation. Once we settle down, once we actually understand who we really are, then it's very easy to be strong and firm in our position, and then act properly. Unless and until we settle down properly, understand who we really are, then it's very difficult to assume any kind of position and fight against, especially this material illusory energy. So the whole point is that if you don't become properly situated, like I can give example of being in the train and sometimes you have a ticket and TT comes and tells you you can't sit there, but you already put your luggage, you just kind of place yourself very nicely. It's very difficult. It's source of an anxiety. Where somebody tells you, no, that you can't identify with this particular place, you have to move to some another place. So constant moving, constant re-identification in this material world is a cause of anxiety. And of course, therefore Krishna, as he explained in Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Yoni Shukanteya, actually all the living entities are my parts and partials. So we can't be good towards somebody and we can't be bad towards somebody else. Things equal to the same things are equal. So if we exclude somebody else from being a servant of the Krishna as well, or part and parcel of the Krishna, that actually we are excluding ourselves from Krishna consciousness and from Krishna himself. So therefore, it's very important to understand that we are part and parcel of Krishna, and that particular identity is also applicable to everybody else. And therefore, we can be situated and we can properly, you know, kind of understand the relationship, our relationship with Krishna and relationship of everybody else here in this material world. And then in that case, it's very easy to perform devotional service. We can't exclude anybody from that particular position that they are in. Of course, that's done only, as I said, simply because of ignorance. So, just to conclude, the initial point is to understand, as Srila Prabhupada was explaining in the purport itself, what our real position is and from where we can fight. What is the best favorable place for fighting and achieving victories actually in this material world against the illusory energy. Like, small example again, Dhritarashtra, for example, when he asked initially, Dharmakshetra, Kurukshetra, Samaveta, Yutsava, Mamaka, Pandava, Chaiva, Kima, Kurvata, Sanjaya, he asked that particular question because he knew that his sons were not properly situated because they were representing a dharma fighting in the place of dharma. And that was Kurukshetra. So we have to understand what is the real position that we can be firm and nourished and properly, you know, situated, that we can take the stand against the fighting of the illusory material energy. Of course, Srila Prabhupada very much, there's not time much, but he speaks very much about this position, being properly positioned in the varnashram structure of the society and being properly placed. And from that particular position, when we understand our real identity, then it's very easy to advance spiritually and fight the illusory material energy. Anyway, Hare Krishna. Stop here. So maybe if there is some short question or something. Gopinath Prabhu, Radha Gopinath Prabhu. So I'll try to repeat as much as I. Radha Gopinath Prabhu is asking, how is it possible to understand our real identity? We have a body and a soul, but still, how to understand what is our position, actually, how to understand the real identity and the way how to act accordingly. Right? So, therefore, as I said, Varnashram Dharma is given, and it's explained that Varnashram Dharma system shouldn't be rejected, although, as I said, like initially in the Vesila Prabhupada just directly gave to the devotees, he enabled them to identify as the devotees directly, you know, not really considering what is their utility was the principle, that was the initial point. So they were doing anything and everything just for the sake of pleasing Srila Prabhupada and for sake of spreading the Krishna consciousness. Of course, nowadays, utility is always the principle. But the best way to settle ourselves is to act according to our own nature. And that nature is described, especially like in Bhagavad Gita, it's also described. The qualities of the Brahmana, the qualities of the Vaishya, the qualities of the Shudra and the Kshatriya. So according to the descriptions, we should compare it to our own nature, basically. And according to that, place ourselves in a particular, act according to particular activities ascribed for those particular positions. And of course, initially we go kind of therefore Brahmacharya is it's a wonderful training when you kind of go through the process of really learning what your identity is. You go through different kinds of services, you're put in different kinds of situations, and then you can, after some time, if the person is sincere and humble enough, understand what actually the person's capacity and the nature is, and then act according to that particular nature that he has acquired. And Varnashram Dharma enables this. And Varnashram Dharma shouldn't be rejected until the point actually we understand that we are not this body. And that's a very high, elevated point. Only till the point when we understand that we are not material body, that we are really the servant of the Krishna, then maybe we won't be kind of taking to the Varnashram system. But even in that point, for the sake of giving example to the others, person will follow still the duties of the Varnashram system. So activity, therefore, when person really understands its own nature, then he acts according to what is prescribed, the nature is this, which is described in the scriptures, and then he applies the same in his own personal life. Anything else? Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.